C7. Number 4A.
Now we come to point 8. Having considered at point 7 just a blunt, big overall sense of the infinite one as one being, let's see that this one being always operates through the four, through the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. So point 8 is the oneness of Word, Christ, Christianity, science. All right, what we want to see is that though there are four different operational aspects of the one being, that they are never four parts of the infinite one, but that they are always the one and are only aspects of that one. So if we take the Word, we can see the Word states that there is only one being. It is therefore the sense of the monotheism of God, Spirit, of the one Lord. There is no God beside me. There is none other God. This one being has nothing to do with filling all space and continuing over all time, because space and time, no matter how big or how small we take it, is not a factor in being. Let's get rid of that sense that there is infinite time and infinite space. We cannot have infinite error, because space and time are erroneous concepts that belong to the human system of reference, to the human way of thinking, not to the divine concept. Thinking from principle, we never take into consideration anything that has to do with time and space. No, not even when it is a long time and an infinite space. It is therefore infinite, not in time and space, but infinite in the never repeating itself. Infinite in infinite manifestation, infinite variation, infinite rarefication. The infinite never repeats itself. This is the starting point of the Word of God, that one being is not a one being, a static one being, that is what it is. It is an infinitely operating being that never repeats itself. If it would repeat itself only once, it would be finite. And if it would be stagnant, static, instead of operative, dynamic, if it would be static, it would be finite too. So we must get the sense of God as an infinite dynamic being, wherein there is nothing static. This is the Word. If we take the Christ, we have again the oneness of being, in so far as we see that one being, that one Word, has one idea, one divine idea, the idea of God. Christ is that divine idea. That Christ can never be put into the plural. It is one. There is only one Christ, and therefore only one Christ idea, the idea of God. What means this one idea? Again, we have to see, because the Word is a dynamic Word, a dynamic oneness, therefore the divine idea, the Christ of that dynamic oneness, is an idea that is constantly at the point of self-expression. We have only one expression, God's own expression. There is no sense of duality that something else could be expressed in being. There is only one Christ, one expression, and so we can free ourselves that something else can manifest itself which is not of the nature of deity. And our consciousness gets acquainted with that sense, golly, in this one being which never repeats itself. What goes on there? If it does never repeat itself, it must always have an idea. What is that idea? And I begin to see that one being constantly conceives of the idea, impels the expression of the idea, executes that idea, and fulfills that idea. Only then is it the one Christ. Can you see what it means? The infinite being has one Christ in the oneness of being. It says that one being itself knows first what it wants to achieve. The being itself knows why it never repeats itself, because it always has an infinite idea. Therefore, the infinite one conceives of that idea. It not only conceives of that idea, it also impels the manifestation of that idea. It not only impels that idea, but it also in its oneness has therefore the ability to execute that idea, to pull that idea through, to make it work. And it not only makes it work, because that idea is one idea and there is nothing outside of itself, therefore it also has the ability to fulfill its idea. That's the Christ, the fourfold operation of the Christ. Christ conceives the idea, impels the idea, executes that idea, and fulfills that idea. He never stops until the point of fulfillment is achieved. If there would be no fulfillment, there would have to be a duality. There would have to be an ideal and an unfulfilled idea. That would be duality. Therefore, our whole concept that says, yes, God is working, but I don't see the result of it, is duality. It is letting the standpoint of God go and take the standard of the human attitude, and the human attitude never sees the fulfillment. So let's see that we do not change the standpoint of oneness and take on the standpoint of the human attitude. Then we come to Christianity. Christianity, as we know in our terminology, is always the outcome of the Christ idea. Therefore, the outcome in the oneness of being can never be something else than the cause and the Word. It isn't so that the outcome then is separated from the cause, or we would have duality. The moment we separate cause and effect, we have duality. And that's the way how the human mind is built up. It says, yes, I quite agree, there is a wonderful cause. God is all right, God is almighty, and for God everything is possible. But the outcome, I'm not quite sure if the outcome will be all right. And I haven't seen the outcome. It always somehow makes a break between cause and effect, between the Word and Christianity. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy brings in a new sense of Christianity and says, well, the point of Christianity is that the ideas always reflect the whole of God. Every idea, from the infinitesimal to the infinite, reflect the whole of God. It's especially in the sixth day of creation, she explains that. Therefore, the expression again is the same as the Word. The expression is not something different than the Word or the Christ. Christianity is only, again, another aspect of the whole. It isn't a fourth part. A fourth part of the four. So that the Word is not one part of the whole, the Christ another part of the whole, and Christianity another part of the whole, and science another part of the whole. It's always the one being, but different aspect of it. So God reflects itself, or principle reflects itself in infinite ideas, but ideas still remaining the whole. I like to add that little sentence at the end to Mrs. Eddy's statements, where Mrs. Eddy likes to say, well, God reflects itself in infinite ideas, full stop, and then the reader usually has a sense, yes, the infinite reflects itself in infinite ideas, therefore every one of these infinite ideas is a part of the whole. And there is the mistake. For myself, I usually add afterward, and remaining still the whole, so that it kills within me the old aspect that an idea reflecting God could be a part of God. It's always the whole of God. And the more we repeat that in our consciousness, we get away from the false sense. So that actually reflection should be considered as God reflecting on himself. Then we wouldn't have that danger of thinking that reflection is a part of the whole. If reflection is that God reflects on himself, then we bring it always right back to the origin, right back to the Word, to the whole Word. Yes. Then we come to the fourth side, which is actually the most important side, because here Mrs. Eddy would now do that what I was indicating right before, namely that the idea must always be brought back to its origin, and that she does in science when she says that principle and idea is one, and this one, she says, is God. It's a unique statement. I think there is not another statement of that kind in the whole of the textbook. It's usually principle, it's usually idea, as if they were two. Perfect principle, perfect man, and it's left to the reader to think what he wants to think. If that perfect principle is somewhere a perfect principle and somewhere a perfect man, it's left open to him to think wrongly. And I think this is the only statement here in recapitulation, as it says, principle and idea is one, and now says, and this one is God. See, brings two concepts back to one concept, God. So as to make quite sure that we don't think about idea as less than God. And this is important. So I'm not surprised that this is a statement that Mrs. Eddy added quite late in her life and in her discovery, because really therein lies the highest sense of oneness. So, God, idea, one, and this one, God, or the Supreme Being, as she would say, and here naturally we really feel, well, if we would think along those lines, we really would finally drop that false concept of men and of people and of we and of I and you and she and he and so on, where really the whole peopleianity would be right out of metaphysics, where really in the oneness of being we only have principle and idea, where we are not even asking ourselves, well, who are we, what is man? This is out. It's completely out. And, where Mrs. Eddy somewhere in Collectania says, there is no personality. And this is, I think she says, and this is more important to know than that there is no disease. We are very much interested that there is no disease because it aches us, gives us enough hell, but we are not so willing to drop the sense that there is no personality, that we have not to deal with people. We always say people, person is a counterfeit of principle, but we don't like to drop it. We still like to see nice people. Oh, they are nice people. And to have nice people as friends. We still like that. All right, that's everybody's liking. But let's see that Christian Science teaches something else. That it is not only a matter of how to get rid of sickness and of accident and of lack and all these things which we do not like, but it's also a question of getting rid of the concept of a God and the concept of a man. That has to go out. And before that doesn't go out, we cannot have a oneness. Because within the oneness, there is no such a thing as a God and a man. There is only a concept of a principle and an idea, and God and idea one. And this only can be called the Supreme Being. And if we do that, we'll see that the human will be blessed by it. The human will not ache under this higher concept. The human will be blessed and will just not have any more so many opportunities to mutter and to peep. It's no more a spirit that mutters and peeps, as we'll see it in the chapter on spiritualism. But it is something that drops away. So this is one of the great practice which we have, a great patient which we have, a constant patient. We can hardly get rid of that patient. That calls up every day a few times and says, here I am, I have to do with people. I'm a person. But principle is the fact about it. So when we see that principle and idea is one, that really frees us from that dualistic sense that we have principle plus idea. That's usually our concept of it. Principle plus idea. So principle and idea are two aspects of the one Supreme Being. If that Supreme Being is considered from the point of view of cause, its principle, if we consider it from the point of view of aspects, its idea. And that all that gives us that indivisibility of being, which is so necessary to see in the oneness of being. There is somewhere in the prose work a very good statement, I can't remember it by heart, doesn't really matter, I can more or less give the meaning of it, where she says that mind cannot be divided into minds. There is one mind, cannot be divided into minds. Spirit cannot be divided into spirits. And soul cannot be divided into souls. And then she says, instead of principle, she says, and being cannot be divided into beings. See? Into beings. Are we quite sure that we are not thinking along the sense that we are beings? that I have a being of my own, and you have a being of your own, and you can have a divine being of your own, and I can have a divine being of my own. We still agree to that without thinking that this is great dualism. That's spiritualism. To have many beings, each one a person. Principle cannot be divided up in beings. And so we could further ask and see that life cannot be divided up in lives. Have you ever thought about that? Didn't we think, I have a life of my own, you have a life of my own, I have to demonstrate my life? And by my life we considered my life with a small l, and your life with a small l, whereas there is only one life that cannot be split up into lives, and that truth cannot be split up into many truths, and love cannot be split up into many loves, that in the oneness of being we just have the one life, the one truth, the one love. If we would really think about these, you see, these are so simple facts. They don't need a lot of study. We really can sit back for a whole hour without reading, but with thinking and thinking out, what does it mean? Do I actually believe in that, or is it so that I think I'm studying Christian Science and yet fundamentally I believe in many beings, in many lives? Isn't it so? And to set that right and slowly get into the habit of seeing that there is only one life, one truth, one love, not many loves, then somehow we get to that point where we can see, oh, well, in that case, if mind cannot be split up in minds many, then I would go to the fact that I would see then the mind that is God is therefore the mind of men. Then the spirit that is God therefore would be my spirit, the spirit of my consciousness. Then I would see that God, who is soul, would therefore be the soul of my consciousness. And so I begin to see that the principle that there is God is therefore my principle of consciousness, the principle of my consciousness, that I have no other principle than the principle that is God in consciousness. That life, that is God, is my life, capital L, is my life, you see. And then I begin to see that when I speak about the life and of my life, then I have to capitalize life. What kind of a life do I have? I can have no other life but that life which is the whole of life, which is the whole of God. You see that this would correct birth and death, both. That life, capitalized, that is God, is my life, but life I would then write with a capital L, and I talk, when I think about the oneness of being, that that truth which is God is my truth, capital T. It's a truth that is me. It's not the truth about me, it's the truth that is me. And so the love of God, the love that is God, is my love, capital L. And I wouldn't have nice loves, loving people, loving a situation, loving my mission, all these things, that then I would say that love is my being. And so thought would rise above the level of absolute Christian Science into that level of oneness where we are in divine science. You see, perhaps you have felt that when we are talking about the oneness of being, that naturally we are talking on the level of divine science and not on the level of absolute Christian Science and not on the level of Christian Science. You know the levels, you have got that tone. so that finally we can see, all right, then in that oneness of being there is nothing ever going on but that mind, capital mind, manifests itself out of itself. Word. That mind expresses itself and manifests itself through no other channel but mind itself. It does not need another channel but the one. So that mind manifests itself out of itself, word, through itself, through no other channel but through the whole of mind, Christ. That mind manifests itself as itself, never as a single isolated idea, but what it can manifest is always the whole of God. God cannot manifest a part of God. How could he do that? Therefore, every manifestation, every demonstration would be the whole of God, Christianity, and would always be there for the whole glory of God, for the glory of mind. And you never lose the term mind. Whatever goes on in the fourfold operation is always mind. Mind as the cause of manifestation, mind as the channel through which it manifests itself, mind as the demonstration or expression or reflection of itself is still mind. It's never smaller than mind. And it has always one big purpose and one aim for the glory of mind and of never anything smaller than mind. If we have that, then we have got into the rhythm of the oneness of being. Then we can see that mind is all in all.